about to be one of the motherfucking realest.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Red Light Podcast Redux. I'm your host, Gina Savage. And today I'm joined, and we started off a little differently because my guest today...
That's how I was feeling, nigga.
That's how he was feeling, and I go with whatever Jimmy's feeling. He is like an animal. You're like a force. You're like a raw force to be reckoned with.
Ragnar.
Whatever. I don't know. He's gonna say stuff I've never heard of today because I am so blatantly white. But I want to welcome Jimmy Martinez, a comic actor, a scene. I'll just do a few of these things. Deadbeat on Hulu, recurring.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I got like 4 episodes out of that shit. It was only supposed to be like one. And
you milked that shit.
Yo, the creators and the fucking director. I want to shout out Jessica Daniels casting. Because I didn't even audition for that shit.
Okay.
She just referred me.
Right.
And sent me.
Hi, and Jessica.
Love, no doubt. So
I'm Gina.
I just got that love, dog. Like, that was a
What's her name again? Let's plug the shit out of her.
Jessica Daniels casting, dog.
Hi, Jessica. Gina Savage. Here's my voice. Okay, get used to it. Well, anyway, we want to welcome you. Let me tell a little bit more. So Deadbeat got 4... shits out of that.
Yeah, okay. 4 shits out of that, dog.
4 shits out of that.
4 nice shits. I was hoping it could be diarrhea, you know what I mean? But it was just shits, you know? That diarrhea flow happened. That's when you really know you popping because residuals is syndication and all that shit coming.
You need to go to the hospital for that shit. Yeah, you hope it's so bad. I don't even know how to top that except with now something really white of me to say. I don't know how to top that except with, hey, top 5 Chris Rock's movie, right?
That was dope.
That was dope.
I had like 2 scenes in that joint, right? And when the shit came out, I'm telling everybody. I was seeing like friends in the business. Like I saw my nigga Jadakiss and he's like, yo, Jimmy Marr, what you doing here? I'm like, yo, I'm in the movie, dog. He like, you in the movie? I'm like, yeah, I'm in this movie, baby. He's like, I got 2 scenes and I'm talking. And he was like, yo.
Damn right.
When that shit came on, I didn't even see me.
What?
I didn't even see. I saw the scene that I was in.
Right.
It wasn't until this shit came out on demand where, you know, my people was like, nigga, you win it, but you just didn't speak. It was real brief. I saw myself.
Okay.
But, you know.
You were in it.
But here's the thing. You know, people think that, you know, just because you shoot a scene in the movie, they think that scene is going to be in the movie, you know, because... That's not the case.
No, not necessarily.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You may make a deleted scene. That was your scene. But I talked so much shit. And I was so happy and proud about that Chris Rock joint because everybody was in it. Adam Sandler, fucking Jerry Seinfeld, J.B. Smoove.
Everybody.
You know, Kevin Hart. You know, it was just like a great fucking cast to be a part of. And then when my part didn't come out, I was like, oh, fuck. So I was so scared to tell people about the Martin Scorsese film with Patricia Arquette.
Okay.
You know, I was just like, you know what? When the wannabe come out, it'll just come out. You know what
right.
I mean? Nick Shadow was definitely dope. He was the director.
Nick Sandow?
Nick Shadow.
Nick Shadow, okay.
From Orange is the New Black.
Okay.
He was super dope. He directed the joint. Martin Scorsese executive produced it. But... Patricia Arquette, you know, while shooting that film, she was super dope. Like, she was so fucking regular. Like, that shit was so refreshing to me because, you know, there were, I don't want to say names and shit like that, although I'm known for saying
You're
names.
You're known for saying names, yeah.
But, you know, there were some actors on that set that was eating, like, in their trailers and shit like that. So for her to come out and eat with... The mere mortals.
Oh, the exactly, you know, right. Like a human.
Yes.
Like to be a human being amongst other human beings. That's the thing.
Yeah, man. Like, because you want to inspire and you want people to feel comfortable about this shit, man, because this business can turn you off, or this business can, if you're not mentally, you know, war prepared, this shit can break you.
Well, we're going to get into that. We'll get definitely get into that. I want to just continue to tell folks a little, where they've seen you, obviously, that not in that. Obviously not in Chris Rock's Top 5.
They've glimpsed me in the Chris Rock Top 5 movie.
Wannabe, Deadbeat, Person of Interest, MTV, Comedy Central, Tough Crowd.
To be on Tough Crowd.
Yes.
With my fucking mentor. This is like the guy I used to run home. You know what I mean? I was just telling my fucking, you know, yo, dog, Colin Quinn, man. You know, as a fucking a young teenager, there was this show on MTV called Remote Control.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Adam, you know, Sandler, there was a couple other comics that was on it. And, you know, I wasn't hip to the comedy scene at the time. You know, I'm still a kid, but there's this one guy that's not saying fluffy shit on the, he's obnoxious and being rude to contestants on the show.
Right.
And I thought that was dope. Like, sure. Someone being human on television, which was unheard of. So
right.
When I finally got to meet him, I was introduced to him through Dave Chappelle, and, it was like, all right, Dave, thank you for allowing me to get here. Hey, Colin, you know, right. It was my fucking mentor, and for him to put me on this show, not once, twice, but like three or four times.
Yeah, you were on a lot.
It was like, wow, you know, and he didn't put you on just because he liked you. You know, you had to bring something to the table.
Yeah, you have something unique. So that's what I want to ask. I want to ask what, because I know you're a comic and an actor, and that you could... There's always people I know that are just comics, and then there are people I know that are both, and the reason I know that is because I'm an actress first, and then not, some would argue that I'm not a comic, but I can see, and it's always about like just being in touch with your humanity and like the groundedness and the realness of you. So what came first for you? Were you an actor? Tell us about your life, where you grew up, what were the circumstances, and that sort of thing.
Well, okay. To say if I was an actor or a comic first, I would honestly have to say I was an actor first, you know, because all my life, motherfucker, I've been acting like this shit has been all right. I acted through all of the pain, through all of the suffering.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, My dad died when I was like 4-5 years old. You know, he had two families on the same block. I didn't even know this shit.
You didn't know that your dad had another family?
No. And I got a sister. And I'm not saying this in a bad way, so people don't take this. But this bitch is really, really ugly, okay?
So you have a family member.
And she was my sister, and I didn't know her. And every time she used to see me... This older lady used to be Jim Jim, come here, it's me, Nikki, your sister. I'm like, you ain't Selena or Shahara, who are you? And then she used to try to make me give her kisses in public and shit. I'm like,
how much older was she?
Like probably like 10 years older. Okay, so you know,
right.
Like, but she was like 10 years older and 10 years uglier, dude. Like, and I'm like, yo, like who the fuck was my dad fucking, dude? Like, you know, but he had two families on the same block, and he worked for the MTA, but he was a wild dude. I didn't really know a lot about my dad.
Your father was wild? That's shocking.
No, I'm not, but you know what? You know what it is?
It's a shocker. I had no idea. Didn't work in corporate America, Jimmy?
No, he actually worked for the MTA.
Right, okay, in the corporate side of MTA? Okay.
No, not the corporate side. Yeah, he was in the battlefield.
Okay.
But he was a wild dude. My mom never talked about him.
Okay.
You know, and whenever I wanted to talk about him, she would get upset and wouldn't want to talk about him. So I didn't really start finding out about my dad until like maybe 5 years ago. And what's crazy, it's from his other baby mother.
How many baby mamas?
He only had two.
Baby mamas.
He only had two. Okay. That was on the same block.
All right. That's on the same block.
Yeah.
Right.
That shit was wild. How do you coexist?
This is Harlem, right?
We was in Brooklyn.
You were in Brooklyn. Okay.
Yeah. I was still young. I was mad young. And then.
So you're an actor. You're facing these things, but you're.
But
acting differently.
Actively, I'm a comic first because what opened up the gateway for everything, music, acting, anything else, was this comedy. I don't give a fuck what you do on earth. It is nothing like doing comedy.
No.
It is nothing like doing this craft because so much opens up into this galaxy that you're existing in. So you're subjected to so much shit. You meet all sorts of people from all walks of life. Nigga, you can't be a Verizon guy installing phones meeting these kind of people. You're going to meet some interesting people.
You'd be surprised, actually.
You know why? Because Dante De Niro is a Verizon
guy.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I'm sitting here, and I'm like, you know what, Jeff? You might want to strike that from the fucking record.
Yeah. I know a couple of Verizon guys, but they're not too bad, actually.
Whoa.
Well, Verizon guys, install mine, whatever. But anyway, continue.
Nah, but, you know, like, comedy opened up everything, so, you know, I started out when I was 15 years old in Harlem. My mom's, she lived around the corner on 126th and 5th Avenue from this spot that was the output for urban comedy, which was the Uptown Comedy Club.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Brown brothers, Andre and Kevin Brown.
Yes.
Mama Brown, Papa Brown, Sean Brown. But that's how I got my break.
And you were how old?
I was 15, but I wasn't allowed in the club because they served liquor. So I used to have to wait until the crowd was coming out of the spot,
right,
and try to hold everyone. Excuse me, yo, listen, I got something. I'm funny. If you could just listen to me for like 3 minutes, I got something to say. So I did this shit for like 3 weeks, almost a month. And the last Sunday, Mama Brown came outside. She's like, you're going to leave my customers alone. If you come back and do this next week, I'm going to call the police on you.
Right.
So I came back and I did it again next week. And Andre Brown, her son, who was the creator of the television show along with Kevin, he came out. He's like, you want to do comedy? I said, yes. And she was like, well, then bring him to the workshop on Wednesday. And I went to the workshop on Wednesday. I started to do the workshop and understanding the craft of comedy, which was premise, setup, punchline. And I started meeting all of these people, like all these people that was coming through the club, like Flex Alexander, fucking Jim Brewer.
Right.
Like, I knew Jim Brewer. Like, this fucking guy used to park his car in front of my building, 2049 Fifth Avenue in Harlem. So
right.
I'm seeing this shit before it got crazy.
Before it explodes.
Tracy Morgan.
Right. So you're there. When do you I meet you because I meet you in probably 97-ish, 98 maybe. Could be. Yeah. I don't know. Boston Comedy Club.
Mm.
When you were before the podcast started. before it started. You were going to tell me a little story about the Boston Comedy Club days. So you make your way through the Uptown Comedy Club, but when do you come over to Boston?
All right. I come over to the Boston Comedy Club. I come over to the Boston Comedy Club like around, I'm like 16 and a half.
Okay.
16 and a half, 17 years old. It was a weird encounter. How I met Dave Chappelle. I didn't know who Dave Chappelle was, and we ended up hanging out the whole night. And
he was there a lot.
Yeah,
he really was. He'd do like we should have been closed, and he would, you know, take us to the wee hours of the morning. He worked out a lot.
Oh yeah, like I'm talking about, like, just come show love. He wasn't even supposed to be there, type shit.
Right.
So I'm coming around there. I meet Jason Steinberg, who discovered Dave Chappelle. And you know, I'm hearing of the legendary Comedy Cellar, but you had to be in the in crowd to be in the in crowd to be accepted into that crowd, and it was just a weird time. So Boston Comedy Club was like the safe zone where all of the misfits were, and it was all good. You know what I mean? So I used to, it was just wild, because they had the Irish bar, the Baggin' Inn, downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first fucking bartender that started giving me drinks, because he thought, because I was always big as a kid.
Yeah,
you know,
you were big. I thought you were 25 then.
I was drinking bullshit. He's like giving me like Budweiser and Hennessy. That's what I wanted. And I'm drinking this shit at like 16 and a half, 17.
Yeah, that place is closed now, by the way.
Yeah, but yeah, but
just,
that's
so
why
we
I'm
don't get anyone
it,
in trouble.
Know,
exactly.
Nah, but it was a whole nother fucking wave down there that coexists with upstairs, which was the comedy, and it was wild because you went from Comedy Land right into fucking Ireland. You know what I'm saying?
Truly.
Like, and so from a kid from Harlem, you know, I was going to high school upstate in Dobbs Ferry, so it's not really a culture shock, but it's somewhat of an adult culture shock, because my peers, they're wishing they were living this life. You know what I'm saying? Although,
right.
Like, white kids, they lived a lot harder, you know, as far as, you know, drugs and alcohol and shit like that when I was coming up, like, compared to the niggas in the hood, because we were selling it, you know what I mean? And smoking mad weed, but I'm around friends that, my white friends going to fucking high school, shooting heroin and sniffing coke and doing all this hard shit, and I'm like, yo, what the fuck is going on?
Right, the white kids get crazy.
You know, but some of my best times ever was with my white friends upstate going to high school, but they were trying to live this life that I was living. And what I realized that I'm around these adults that's doing these drugs and this wild shit, and this is why I surpassed peer pressure, because I was put into a situation where no one's really going to guide you. Whatever wits that you do have about you, you're going to have to utilize it. And this isn't I'm not priding myself on this, but nigga, I've been in these streets, man, since I was like 8 years old, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, my mom's didn't do the best that she could, but it is what it is. So I'm taking what I'm knowing from the streets and life, and I'm applying that into my world of comedy.
All right. Expound out on that a little bit.
Like on what level?
Okay. On, like, what's happening in the streets? Like, what dynamics are happening in the streets that you bring? Like, is it just the dealings with people, like how to like manipulate the situations or whatever it might be,
or just move through the manipulation? Because I found out once people started to know my age, they tried to move a certain way with me,
right?
You know what I'm saying? And I you know, being that I was out in these streets, you know, young, selling drugs, my niggas, so I'm dealing with people,
right?
You know,
you're dealing with all walks of life,
and it's crazy how they coming at you,
right?
So I'm taking that as me being able to interact with all walks of life and coming into this university of misfits,
right?
Which is Comedy Land, where it's just more condensed.
Mm-hmm.
It's more concentrated. It's not as spread out. So now I have to really take all of that and hone all of that I've learned and try to move through this. And it was difficult for me because I'm coming from a different code of living and behavior.
Yeah.
Like I didn't understand how guys can sit back and talk about each other's mother. You don't know Elsa Martinez. So I'm not going to sit here and let you talk about Elsa Martinez. We ain't going to play those games. I'm a man. Although I'm a kid, but I'm a man.
Yes.
We don't play dick sucking games. We're not going to do that. Where I come from, niggas get their top popped for that. Off the rip. So I'm coming around grown ass men. And they playing around like this. And I didn't know how to deal with it but through violence. So here I am smacking niggas out. And it was wild. Like, you know, like to even go through that shit like that. Like, it was a time where Artie... Fuqua, he used to fuck with me on a regular basis, but I knew that he knew because I was young, and he used to come at me crazy. And when we had that issue, when the accident happened, the first thing that I can think of was that incident and how much I pray that he makes it through it.
Yes.
So I can show him that was just a moment in time, and I love him no matter what, and he's still my big brother.
Yes, yes.
Because these moments are interruptions of our past, and you have to embrace them. We, in this comedy game, no matter if we don't like each other, whatever, we're a family.
We are a family,
absolutely. A dysfunctional fucking family. And... no one understands us but us.
Yeah, I mean,
No one understands us but us, man.
You know, I travel in two worlds, Jimmy. I'm in a sobriety world, and that's a whole other culture of, you know, misfits and crazies and love. You know, we get through this, and then I'm in this other game where we're kind of dysfunctional, but we're functional because obviously we're all aspiring and doing. And then there's like this, you know, the management role of balancing in between all that for me for all these years, trying to stay, you know, in between the absolute crazy dark side of some of this, which, you know, is part of the game too.
Facts.
Right. And then, you know, but I don't have, you know, we all have what we have in our childhood. We talk about this on the podcast a lot and how we move through that. And, you know, you have growing up and like this, you know, the street culture and the drugs. And I was one of those white kids that bought the drugs and, you know, for whatever my reasons were. And, you know, and then somehow we managed to find this niche in comedy. You mentioned Dante Nero before. Like, Dante had, you know, a lot of advantages in many ways. And then he took to, you know...
Yo, you know what it was?
Pimping and, you know, it's a lot of stuff.
It was the turning point for me. The turning point for me was my man getting murdered in my face right on the block in broad daylight.
What happened?
Nigga just ran up and shot him
just
five
like
times, two in the head, three in the torso. And he can easily, whatever he had left in his motherfucking clip, whatever was in the gun, he could have dumped on me.
Okay.
He didn't. But seeing my man go like that, but still having shit in the streets and still having money in the streets, and, you know, we still young. And this is what niggas don't even understand, man. Like, yo, we owned a night. Yo, like, Giuliani had to do what he had to do, B. Because it was the wild, wild west.
It was the wild, wild west. I was here when that was happening.
You know, like, yo, Harlem now is so different. Harlem is like the village right now, yeah. Dog. It's
they got a Starbucks in Harlem. What, man, the hell?
Yo, it's so crazy. But
pick me up a latte in Harlem. Okay,
seeing
yeah.
my man go, and then one night, Tracy Morgan. I'm in the back of the Uptown Comedy Club waiting to go on for the New Jack segment. I got all my cracks out on the fucking floor in the back. All the other niggas is up front. Tracy Morgan walks to the back. I'm counting my money and shit like that. He's like, yo, what's this, Jim? You're going to have to make a decision. You funny or you not? You leading yourself in one way in the wrong way. And I looked at this nigga and I'm like, is this nigga trying to show off or is he being honest? And he said, yo, come here. He pulled me out to the second door. I picked up all my shit off the floor. And the nigga was like, yo, come here. You want to do comedy? Or you want to be in the streets? I said, I want to do comedy. He said, then throw that shit in the trash. And I looked at this nigga. And he's like, throw it in the trash if you want to do comedy. Because if you don't, you want to be in the streets. Threw the shit in the trash. And we walked back out. I went on stage. All that shit. When that nigga left, I went back and got those drugs.
Yo,
my nigga, because that was like $300 worth of drugs.
You know, you had me in tears, motherfucker. I can't believe you.
But listen, I knew then I really didn't want to do this shit anymore. I knew then, but okay. Nah, nigga, I just read up and I had to get that money back.
All right, fine.
But those were the turning points when I started seeing niggas that was doing it in the game that actually gave a fuck, you know.
They gave a fuck and they gave a fuck about you, you know.
Yeah.
Clearly they did.
Yeah, facts.
Facts. So I want to talk about your style because, you know, now we know we've got a great sense of who you are and where you came from.
Mm.
And I say you're raw. And I think, you know, and when we met, you and I at the Boston Comedy Club, it was day one love. Like, I didn't know all that shit, but I didn't know all that. But like you said, it was a dysfunctional, functional family where all the misfits got together. That's how it felt. And I really felt like I'm not that much older than everybody, but I felt sort of like everyone's, you know, comedy mom in a lot of ways.
Definitely,
you know?
You definitely was the
I was
aunt.
Sexy
you
as
was
shit,
hot,
let's face
you was the hot aunt that everybody, there was conversations. There was those late night conversations at the back of the inn drinking and who would you want to... Yeah. So, it was always day one. Like, from the first time that I encountered you, like, there were some people that felt some kind of way about you, but then when I would get around the older guys, they'd be like, nah, if she has a problem with them, it's them.
Yeah.
And once I got around you and I saw you embrace me from the beginning, like, I wasn't a barking kind of motherfucker, but
no.
For you, I would bark, dog. I'm like, hopefully she find me attractive. You know what I mean? We can get this popping. But if not, you know what I'm saying? At least
right.
You see I'm out here grinding, you know? And
but
you used to put me on stage.
Yeah, you would get up. And, you know, the thing is this, and I want to ask you what you think the biggest misconception about you is, because your approach to me was always loving. It was always loving. That underneath everything about you, there's... is love underneath everything. So while some people might find you, for lack of a better word, menacing, you might be a menacing presence to some, like, what's this motherfucker all about? You are loving to me. Like, I see you as a bit, you know, it's in your freaking resume, best hugs, right? Skill. I fucking read that. Could I just, yeah, this is what he has on his,
shit, that's
wait,
hilarious,
yeah, his
dude.
Resume. He's I say you wrote best hugs. I think you ought to, if you're going to make that a skill, you should say world class hugger, but that's how I'd upgrade your resume. He's also known for prison lingo and Ebonics, apparently you're an awesome babysitter.
Yep.
Kids Those are great
me.
Skills.
I know how to make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and cut them diagonally so they know that I care. And
you're so sweet.
You know, I know how to make strawberry quick. You know, some people like to stir it like 5 times. No, I put that love. There's a 21 stir.
You
and I like to stir while I'm pouring.
21 stirs.
21 stirs. So it's all ingrained into the milk. So it's just strawberry. I don't know
that.
If strawberry is a word.
I want to keep it.
It's out there, dog.
Because you say strawberry, and I say streets creds.
No
streets
doubt.
Creds.
No doubt.
Yeah, I have streets creds. Anyway.
And I love Frisbee, too, so kids
love
Frisbee.
You're like, what are you, hacky sack, too, this motherfucker over here? Yeah, I'm from Harlem. This is my latte at my hacky sack. So what do you think, though, is the biggest misconception about you?
You know what it is? It's just like this whole shit with Donald Trump. I'm not saying I'm thinking what he's doing is right or whatever, but at the end of the day, motherfuckers don't like him because he say what the fuck it is. And you know,
How you're being careful here.
Because you got to be very careful when you incorporate Donald Trump
into anything. Yeah.
You know, because I don't want, off the rip, no, I am not for him. I'm not for him. Let me let that be known. But I'm just trying to be delicate to the people that are for him so that they understand that I'm compassionate and I get it. People fear real motherfuckers. I'm a real motherfucker, dog. Don't come and gossip to me about another motherfucker. That's what whole niggas do. I'm a real nigga, dog. Like, I don't have time for that shit. Motherfuckers don't want to be around me if they know they a whole motherfucker. They be out here doing that sucker shit. And talking about people, manipulating situations, blocking motherfuckers' blessings in the game. All this sucker shit. I'm not for that. I don't like people talking shit about other people. If you got something to say, because if I got something to say about anybody, I'll say it in their face.
Well, let's get to that, because here's one of the things that came up this year where I was just like, you know, I was just, you know, trolling Facebook as I often do. trolling that shit. And there, here comes Jimmy, and I'm like, you know, he's got this smile on his face, and he's, you know, he's smoking a blunt or whatever. He's just like, you know, he's got the music on. He's just casual. I'm like, all right, what's he doing? You know? And then you go off on this rant about, you know, comedy club people and you know, the game. So you want to, you know, yeah. You talk about, it takes a lot of guts, actually, to say what you said and how you said it. Some people might have taken it a certain way, but most people know how this deal is played. So go ahead.
It's like Jerry Maguire writing that memoir.
Yeah.
And the only thing is, you know, that's what it's like for me. You know, I'm alienated because I call motherfuckers out. Like, you know, there's a lot of these old niggas in the game, like the Talents, the Rob Stapletons, the Capones, you know, these guys stealing jokes, stealing budgets, not wanting to fucking write, doing the same jokes for the last 20 years, like not daring to be great, but you want to sit back and you want to try to dictate the movement of what's going on in this cycle. You motherfuckers, they took the game from everybody that was eating in New York by naming themselves the kings of New York of comedy.
Mm.
And who crowned you niggas? Now, but here's the thing. I wasn't as funny as these niggas were at the time. So I couldn't really say what I wanted to say, because you can't go to war if you don't have the weaponry. So, you know, I had to hold my tongue, you know, and sit back for years and watch this fucking shenanigans go on.
Right.
But nigga, once I went away and trained with Yoda and I came back a fucking Jedi.
Was that Big J by any chance?
I love Big J. His fucking hour special is going
to
be fucking super.
I was
super
there.
Open.
Were you there? Did you go? My God. Man. He's fucking hilarious. Sure. Always has been.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But Big J's a big supporter on the low of fucking enough is enough. Uncle Keith Robinson.
Yes.
Where's my enough is enough?
You know, yeah,
he fucking there. Ben Bailey. I was just fucking hanging out with, dude. I just found out Ben Bailey, PJ Lanners.
Okay.
And I was out fucking in front of Cafe Wa smoking a vapor. And he started telling me about Ben Belli. I didn't know Ben Belli was at the Cellar. And he was like, you know, Ben Belli won like fucking 7 Emmys. I was like,
what, for Cash Cab?
Dude. I was
for Cash Cab?
Yes. And it wasn't 7. Ben Belli walks out of the fucking Comedy Cellar. He's like, there he is right there. I walked up on Ben Belli. Right. I was like, dude, I got to ask you a question. He's like, he was talking to somebody. I felt so horrible. But he's like, hold on. Yeah, what's up, Jimmy? I said, Ben, did you win 7 Emmys before? And he was like, he makes this face and goes, no, just 6. And I called PJ Lanners over. Right. And I was like, yo, dude. He won 6 fuck, and he goes crazy because he just right. threw that number out there, and it was right. 1 under, and it still blew me away because right. I know Ben Belli since I didn't know he was a fucking Emmy Award yeah. winner.
I know.
You know
who
but,
knew? I didn't know that either.
But a lot of motherfuckers.
I'm going to have to research that. That's true.
I was in a bar one yeah. night with Ben Belli when at the Bag It In, and Hoffa was trying to. Punch Ben Belli, like not punch, but cut plain in Ben Belly's face. This is when I knew Ben Belli was a thug. That nigga put his Budweiser down. He took one more swig.
Mm-hmm.
If you put your hands in my face again, I'm going to punch you in your fucking face. That's what Ben Belli
yes.
said to Hoffa.
Yes.
And Hoffa stopped, and Ben Belli finished the rest of his beer.
I do believe, and I'm not going to name the comic, but I remember one incident. I believe this to be Ben Belli, but I believe that a more well-known comic at the time did a joke that was either Ben's joke or a very, very close version of Ben's joke. And Ben took that comic aside and intimidated the shit out of that comic, and that comic coughed up $300 right there.
Fucking gangster. I always knew that motherfucker was a gangster, man.
But he'll ask you some questions in the cab. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Nah,
he
was another one.
Yeah.
From day one that always showed me love, even though I was a young kid. And like he always said, he was like, Jimmy, you've always been funny to me because you were different. You weren't typical. Like I consider my style to be like alternative urban.
Yes.
You know, like that's the brand that I've named it. Alternative urban, well, because I think that I mesh both worlds together, you know.
I think you do too.
My theory on comedy is I don't believe in there's an audience and then there's a star. I believe that we're all in the room occupying the space, and we have the respect of listening to one person that's under that light. And for us to share it, not for me to have it, but for us to share it, I want it to feel like we're in a room or at a barbecue or we're hanging out in front of the building and I'm just that funny guy in the group that's just saying
right.
shit that's how I want us to feel. I don't want them to feel like there's some sort of boundary that they can't really feel connected or touch me.
Absolutely. You know, I want to talk about your stand-up. I also want to just factually, Jim Vern, our sound guy, said that he just pulled this up. As the host of Cash Cab, Ben received Daytime Emmy nominations in 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13 for Outstanding Game Show Host, winning in 2010, 11, and 13. The show took home honors at the Daytime Emmy Awards for Best Game Show in 2008, 9, and 10. So
this motherfucker.
Fucker.
Yeah. Hey, yo, that's so fucking crazy.
It's crazy.
And yo, dude, we were drinking until like fucking 5 in the morning the other night. Like, and he's still regular.
Ben
he's still Bailey. Regular, man. You
yeah,
know?
Of course.
And that's why... That's the ultimate goal, to achieve this hustle and get to the point where you're comfortable in life, but don't let it take control and make you this monster.
Right. It's when ego gets in the way. And I'm guilty of that in other ways in my life where ego gets in the way. And so it's about trying to stay being observer. Enlightening, I think, making people laugh, and being a little bit humble about it. I mean, you know, if we have this ability, why be a fucking scumbag and a snob? I know a few snobs. Why be a snob about it?
How the game is putting all these ugly niggas on right now. Like, for some reason, a lot of ugly motherfuckers, and these niggas ain't even funny. They just ugly, weird-looking, fat, awkward-shaped. And, you know, these are the niggas Hollywood is putting on right now. Whatever happened to the handsome, real niggas getting on? Whatever happened to that?
Well, but
I'm watching the game. I'm watching who they forcing to be next. Hold on, man. Yo, chill, B. We're not going to sit here and we're not going to really act like Hannibal Buress is really funny. This is my nigga. We not going to do that. I done watched two of his fucking specials. What is the hype all about? This nigga's just coming on stage talking shit. I don't feel like there's no real thought process in it. And I just feel like that's a letdown. You get green-lit it where you getting seen in front of millions and you go push that bullshit product out for the people, my nigga, just because you got the green light? That's not fair.
Well,
I'm not saying that the game is supposed to be fair, but nigga, I'm going to call it out how I see it. The game is exposed, man. This shit is all politics. These niggas ain't funny out here, dog.
Well, I'm not going to argue that. I'm not going to argue that it's not unfair. And some people that, are getting greenlit are not funny. I'm not going to argue that. That's always been the case. And many times I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Let's not act like we're going to be walking around like the Walking Dead. Nigga, I see you. I'm not just talking about Hannibal Buress.
I know you're not.
That's a strong name that I had to use as an example because it's a prime example. Any real motherfucker listening to this podcast will be like, well, you know what? That's a fact. Look at the last mother. My man told me to look at the last motherfucking joint.
I haven't watched it, so I have no comment.
But you know, I'm happy niggas is working, though.
Right, because
you know what I'm saying? Like, don't get me twisted. Like, I'm not mad because it's just another affirmative action positioning. That's how I feel. Because if you're not putting real funny motherfuckers on, you just filling in a slot to motherfucking keep the consistency of fake Hollywood.
Well, let me talk about your style for 1 second, because I love your style. You are a storyteller, and when you get on stage, you're commanding. Like, you don't let people get away with shit in life and even in the audience, okay? Because I was just watching you deal with, some woman. I think whatever said I watched, this cracked me up. This is what you said.
What did I say?
You said, you started off with, women can save the earth. And you really set the stage. How many of you really would like to save the earth? How many people? Who would not want to save the earth? Right? And he really, really draws you in. Well, of course I want to save the earth. And then you're like, these guys over here don't want to save the earth. Why don't you shut up? Because, or whatever you say. But then the lady, how do you think we would best save the earth? And you say blowjobs, and I agree. And then you say something, and this is what I mean. Why this is hilarious to me, and this is what probably makes me, I love comedy, and I don't take things so personally. And some people are so personal, everything. Yeah, so take things so personally, but you're like, your day can change because of vaginal secretions. They can alter your daily plans.
Facts. Right?
So I just like vaginal secretions can alter your daily plans.
Yes.
As a man, knowing that that exists.
Yes.
Vaginal secretions can do that. Now, in the middle of talking about vaginal secretions, and I just like saying that myself, yes, actually, as you can plainly
great
hear,
word.
Vaginal
great word
secretions.
Play, you know, it's so much better than saying the P-U-S-S-Y, you know?
Right. Vaginal secretions.
Yeah, dude.
Somebody's doing something in the back, and you call them out. And you call them out, and you're like, no. Why should I interrupt you? And you do it, and It's borderline. It's great because it's it's borderline threatening, right? It's like you're scared. You could because you scare. But it's true. Let's do only the spotlight's on me. I'm sorry.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Right. Totally. Yeah.
Right. So, you deal with hecklers. But I love that because it's I've seen CK do it. I've seen you know people handle hecklers. Of course Bill Burr, known for that shit, handle hecklers. I mean,
yo,
how
Bill
often
Burr,
the,
man,
right?
Yo, man. There's not gonna ever be another Bill Burr. I don't give a fuck who's trying to manipulate him or what it's trying to be. Yo, Billy is a fucking gunslinger, dog.
Yeah.
Straight up, and I'm talking about one shot, one kill. And don't stay there and let him just fucking hammer you away because he will unload, upload, and just fucking bury you, dude. Like, and his comedy's just awesome, man. And it's coming from a real place.
Yes.
And that's how I like to deal with hecklers.
From the real.
Because here's the thing. I don't know your mother. I don't know what life you're living outside of this realm. But what I do know is this moment, this situation, you're an adult and you're in a fucking professional setting. This
yes.
is an event setting.
It is.
And you're coming here to motherfucking be obnoxious and fuck up people's hustle that's trying to pump their craft? You're out of control. So I like to put that light on them.
Yes.
And let them know, please, don't come this way because I'm going to bury you. Don't step. I remember I got barred from the Boston Comedy Club for 6 months because
that was not during my era.
No, it wasn't. Okay. This is during Ben Morrison and okay. Travis and them.
All right.
But an audience member said some wild shit. He was saying the nigger word, and he I told him, yo, my man, you say that shit again, I'm gonna smack the shit out of you. He is like, if you can say it, I can say it. I was like, no, you can't. And if you think I'm playing, say it again. Gina, this motherfucker said it again. And the stage was already set, doc.
Yeah.
So when he said it, my infamous words, seriously?
You went seriously?
Stepped off that stage, seriously. Walked right up to him, and smacked everything out of him. And people started paying their checks.
Yeah, that would be the time.
And once people started paying their checks and getting out of there,
yep.
The comics that stuck around, because yep. this was Travis's friend, and Travis was hosting. So yep. Travis was supposed to nip that in the bud. And Travis knew me. These comics tried to jump me inside there.
Oh, my God.
There was 7 of them against me. Rondell Hartley was in there, too.
I love Rondell.
Me, too. So
he's not going to yeah, he's not going to do nothing.
Rondell.
I love him. He's going to be like, all right.
Yo, that nigga slid. You know slid the back up. Row? Did, you know, yeah. I watched him
yeah.
I from
love
one
it.
Angle.
He's not. He is like the most chillest dude. He is out. He's not dealing with it. Yeah.
Yo, Gina, man.
I know.
But, you know, hecklers need to be dealt with.
They do.
On a real.
Yeah.
We should be honest with them. We should not give them the scapegoat of not motherfucking owning up to what they're doing at the time.
All right. Let's talk about, we mentioned this. You did a little, I mean, you talk about, you know, in your skill set. Prison lingo, and mm-hmm. you did serve a little time.
Yeah, I did 2.5.
And was that drug related or
nah, man?
Was it for the guy that just said the N word and you just lost your shit?
I got it was a crazy. See, it was an assault too, but it was like 2 assault 2s, 2 counts of kidnapping, like 7 burglaries,
I'm
and
sorry.
All this wild. It was this yeah. wild story. That was the news got involved. And when you read the paper, this is why I don't even read the paper no more. Right. Once when it happened to you,
sure.
You understand it better now. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. Because you tell you to me, yo, my nigga, they said that I beat up an ex-girlfriend of mine because I was in a jealous rage because I walked in on her and her lover. The guy that was in the store was a homosexual, a gay guy. What before the incident was a friend of mine. I can't say his name, but
yeah.
You know, he happened to be in there when the girl solicited me from out of the motherfucking street and to come into. That's how the burglary happened. Because once you step into that's how it breaks down into law.
Okay.
But long story short, she said that I beat her up, punched her all in her face and all this wild shit. Dog, when they got the medical records and I went to the arraignment,
mm-hmm.
The judge looked at it was a female judge.
Yeah.
Looked at the fucking medical records and listened to the statement. She said her fucking her testimony isn't matching what the medical is saying.
The female judge is not agreeing with what's written versus what she's saying. Okay.
No, versus what the medical records is showing.
Right.
So they released me on my own recognizance.
Recognizance?
Yes.
Okay.
recognizance.
Recog.
So
yes.
I'm coming back to court a week later. For the hearing to see if it's going to be misdemeanors or felonies, I get rearrested.
What?
The bitch said that they'll pull a gun out on her a month and a half before this incident.
What?
So she brought up a whole new
charge, right?
But here's what's going on. I caught this bitch sleeping with her boss. Her boss is the owner of a very popular fucking Bath and Body product. She's the art director. I caught them with some spyware recording shit on the phone with each other, talking about where they're going to meet up and what hotel, so forth and so on.
Right.
With that recording, I sent to his wife of three girls, three children.
Right.
His wife, when I called her, she asked me to send it.
Right.
She always knew that something was going on.
So she wanted some proof.
So I send her this proof. When I sent her that proof,
this
is when all of this shit happened. So the nigga sicked her on me. All of the charges that they had, they dropped. And I just had to cop out to a fucking assault too. Which was not supposed to be an assault too. It was misdemeanor charges. All of these charges were misdemeanors. The district attorney made this shit felonies. Made all of this shit up, dog. Like,
so
I wish I would have known we was going to talk about this, because I would have brought. I still got the legal work on this shit,
sure.
Dog. The show, motherfuckers. Because I can't wait to pop. Because I'm going to talk about this story.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be able to tell these niggas the real. Because these snake Sodom and Galore motherfuckers, they still on it. I had to hold that. I had to hold that 2.5 years, man.
That was how long ago? We have only a few minutes, and, you know, obviously we're going to have you back at some point.
Yeah,
but
some point,
really, truly.
I came home in 2013.
Okay, so you've been back, and you came back, out of the gate ready to go. And
first thing I booked was motherfucking was a Macy's commercial. I went when I came home, but I was planning my escape when I was already in jail from when I get released. I already knew what I wanted to
right.
do, dog. I you know, when you in jail, I used to be afraid of the fame. I had so many opportunities, dog, to really be that next motherfucker.
Right.
But I knew what was going on. I was afraid when I was on Hot 97 in the morning. Although Sway was the fucking host, I was the star.
You know.
I was afraid of the fame, so I kept fucking up all my opportunities. I didn't realize until I was locked up in jail up north, wasting away with these motherfucking loser niggas that's in there for drugs and shit. talking about when they go home, what they gonna do is sell drugs. The same shit that land them right back in that motherfucker. So I said to myself, no more of the bullshit. When I come home, I'm gonna get this shit popping. I want this. And I went to Jason Steinberg, who's been my friend since I was 16 and a half. Once again, Dave Chappelle introduced me to this nigga.
Yes.
You know, and I sat down, I gave my spill to Jason, and Jason didn't really want to fuck with me. It was Sana Hannibal that says, Jason, I don't know whoever he is, but he's a fucking star, and I want to work with him. Jason called me the next day. It was like, Jimmy, I want you to come down. I want you to sign your contract. And I said, I told him, this is what I told him. I got three motherfuckers I want you to bring in with me. And this is what I'm offering you. I'm offering you. And I don't give a fuck. I'm telling the world what it is. I'm giving you 25% on any movie and 20% on any commercial and television. With that, I want you to sign Chris Jarrell, Rip Michaels, and Marshall Brandon. And he signed all three of them.
And they're all doing great. They're all doing great. Again, limited on time.
Yeah,
so,
I'm so sorry.
No, I'm just riveted to everything that you've said. And
I remember I pulled the gun out on G. George for trying to threaten Masavi Aguirre in front of the Boston Comedy Club. Lenny, the fireman, was right there.
Yeah,
I pulled out a Glock 9 right there. Masavi saved that nigga. I was going to do it.
Well, I'm glad he saved that guy. And
but he was
you.
I think he was trying to rob. You know, Masavi used to have all that money.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
I know. I had that money, too. I had that money, too.
I know.
Where was my Glock? I'm just kidding.
Nobody was trying to press up
nobody
on you.
Nobody was trying to do that. I was thinking about this, you know, because you're an actor. You know, those questions that they ask at the actor studio. But there's one that I like for you. And if heaven exists, what would you like God to say when you reach the pearly gates? What would you want to hear?
My son, I understand what you were going through down there. And I forgive you for everything. Welcome home.
That's perfect. That is perfect. And you've never needed my forgiveness, that's for sure. I loved you from the gate.
True story.
And I will say to the folks listening, Jimmy Martinez appears regularly at Broadway Comedy Club. We love him. He is a force and a presence. I always feel safer when you're there,
yo,
too.
Yo, Dina, Dina, motherfucking Al Martin, man.
Yeah.
But they always has been super supportive of me. But this new dude that I just started fucking with, you know, good guy, man. You know, good, really, really good guy, man. And I just was happy to be on this Latino Laughter show, man. You know, George Diaz.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Like he's a really dope guy. Yo, man, it's just a lot of new comics out there that's coming up that I just really hope that people are paying attention to. You know, they got this little kid, Jody Robinson. I really think that he's animated and funny. Aja Bennett, you know.
Yeah, love her. Know, she's great. She did Broadly Funny.
Yeah, super. You know, what I like about her, opposed to a lot of urban female comics out here, is that she has content.
Yes.
It's not about pussy, dick, or how about these men, ladies, and all. Like, you know, she's got a fucking master's, you know, and she's a fucking teacher. You know, like, she got content and material.
Absolutely.
and that's the kind of shit that I like. That little Leonard Oots is coming up, you know. That little fucking weirdo. There's a lot of young dudes. Marshall Brandon,
yeah,
really funny guy, you know what I'm saying. Omar Thompson. There's just a lot of comics people don't know about.
Well, they will.
And I just, you know, if I'm getting a light, man, I really like to put it on others, man. You know, because I'm gonna shine regardless, man. It is what it is.
Well, you did today. Where can people find you on Twitter? Can they find you on Facebook and stuff?
I'm on Facebook, but I really don't be accepting a lot of people on my Facebook but I'm also on Instagram at the real Jimmy Martinez, proper grammar. Twitter, I do got Twitter, but I don't be talking all that shit. I really got social media just to let niggas know I'm here.
All right. Well,
you know what I'm saying?
You are here. This, we have to wrap up. I want to thank you.
I want to shout out all the baby mothers out here getting your new nigga fresh with your baby father's child support checks. Shout out to y'all.
Yeah, I second that.
Shit, man. Gina, this was dope, man. Thanks for having me, baby.
You got it. You know it. This has been the Red Light Podcast Redux. I am Gina Savage, your host. You can find me on Savage in the City on Twitter, Savage in the City Picks on Instagram. I want to thank Jim Verne on Sound Engineering, and also our WROM radio listeners in Detroit, internet users worldwide, subscribers, please subscribe to the Red Light. And you can find us on Twitter at Red Light NYC.
Shout out to Dr. King, man. Today was the day he was assassinated.
Shout out. We talked about that.
You know?
Yeah. Perfect day.
Yo, shout out to all the comics out here doing your thing, man. Yeah. Keep working. Cat Williams, man. We love him. Praying for you, wild motherfucker.
Wild motherfucker. Okay.
We out, man.
We out.
I love you, baby. Thanks for having me.
Got it.